Please go ahead. This afternoon's conference call is now being recorded.
Thanks. Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening. This is a translation and transliteration of contact information PDP working group on Thursday, the 6th of March 2014. On the call today, we have Wanawit Akuptra, Pitanan Kowamor Patana, Peter Reinforth, Chris Dillon, May Sirchapim Sirwit, Peter Green, Jennifer Chung, Vinay Kumar Singh, Rudy Vansnick, Peter Dernbach, Amir Elzadar. We have apologies from Justin Sue and Ephraim Percy Kenyatto. From staff, we have Julie Hudland, Amy Bivens, Lars Huffman, and myself, Carrie Agnew. I'd like to remind all participants to please state your name before speaking for transcription purposes. Thank you very much, and over to you.
Thank you very much for that. Now, just for it's a formality thing, really, but I need to ask you whether your statement of interest has changed since the last call. If it has, just put up your hand in the chat or just make that known now. Being no hands up, we can then move on into the next agenda point, which is item 4, responses from SOs and ACs. And I would like to have a look at what has been going on in the at-large translation and transliteration wiki, because they've started to post some things, and there are also some comments. So, yes, I'd like to bring up that now, and I'll see if I can find a URL for that. That would be handy. That's okay. I'll just post that into the chat. Okay, so if we have a look at that that URL, I don't know whether it's possible to display it in the middle there, but we'll just have a look at what they've been saying. And you know, they've been answering our questions, basically. One small thing, but it's quite useful. They've actually started to use the word transformation, and they use that to mean either translation or transliteration, and I think it's a really useful shorthand, because translation and transliteration takes a very long time to say, so I think that might be a bit of an improvement to our vocabulary. And Julie has just displayed that on the screen. Great. So if we just scroll down a bit, I think the... Now, let me see where it really gets going. It's a slightly fiddly document. I think, yeah, so from first draft submitted, oh, that looks right, yeah. Okay. And some rather interesting comments here about the fact that both translation and transliteration could be viewed as privileging the users of that language, which, you know, in practice is probably going to be English, over other, you know, over other users. And so, you know, I almost feel, looking at the top of this document, that there is a question: should we be doing this at all? Should we be transliterating or translating? Then, and likewise, it moves on just a little bit further down to say, we believe that it is unreasonable to assume that registrants will be able to enter contact information in scripts or languages other than their local scripts and language. So that is rather an interesting opinion. Okay, and then moving down, I should explain as I'm going, if there's anybody who would like us to bring up a particular point on any of this, then please do so, because it may be rather tedious just listening to me chatting about it. Now, as we move down, you know, there is this sort of debate about translation and transliteration, and since At Large created this document, there has been quite a lot of correspondence on the mailing list, and basically there was a large Taiwanese piece of correspondence which Peter Dernbach sent in, and in there the interesting thing is that very often on this group we have been saying, well, you know, perhaps what we might want to suggest is that organizational names would use an English translation if one exists, and otherwise transliteration, and that addresses would use transliteration. But What is coming out of looking at some of these submissions is that there is a category of city name particularly where that sort of simple approach is unlikely to work, because you've got for example, in Taiwan, you have what is normally known as Taipei, but you know, under strict transliteration would actually be Taipei with a B. You've also, even more dramatically in Taiwan, another big city is the city of what is usually known as Keelung, K-E-E-L-U-N-G, I think. But actually, if you were to use the strict pinyin transliteration, that would be Geelong, which is just completely unrecognizable. Then if we go a bit further afield, in the south of Korea, there is a city which always used to be Busan with a P, but these days is very often Busan with a B. So There seems to be quite a long list of cities where we may not want to advocate transliteration, because the cities are, you know, they're known under a more common form, and in those cases I've just been telling you about, those are basically older romanizations. But there is actually another related case, and that is where the English form has almost no connection to the original form, and the famous, I don't know whether we want to call it a translation, I'm actually struggling for a term to refer to this phenomenon, but the common example is actually the city of Bangkok in Thailand, because in Thai it is known as Krung Thep. So there is no connection between the Thai form and the form that is usually used. And so under the policy that we were sort of thinking about, actually we would be writing Krung Thep, but this is possibly not very helpful when everybody knows the place is Bangkok. Before I go any further, does anybody have any feeling on this issue? Does anybody have an opinion on this? I find it very interesting. I would really welcome other people's input on this matter. Okay, Amr, would you like to say something about that?
Hi, Chris. This is Amr. Actually, my comment is more general than it is specific to what you were just referring to. And that is that I'm getting a sense from the comments that we're receiving that there is a some confusion on what it is this PDP is proposing. Perhaps not so much in the ALAC statement, but in others. When we say that this is a PDP meant to determine whether translation and or transliteration of contact information is desirable or not. It does not mean that we are advocating that registrants do not submit their contact information in their native languages and native scripts. We are just actually asking the question of whether you think that this should be translated into a unified language and transliterated into a unified script. And I'm getting the impression that the responses we're getting are based more on, yes, we would like to be able to have our contact information submitted in our native language and in non-Latin-based script. I'm not sure how, but I think it would be prudent to reach out to those submitting comments and maybe make a distinction between the two. That is my personal feeling, at least. I'm not sure if others would agree with me or not. Thanks.
Thank you very much for that. I think it is possible to view those questions in several ways. I would really welcome comments on that. I mean, certainly my own approach, has been to look at it and it's really to make suggestions that, we are recommending that the original languages be used. Another thing which has come out of this is that Rudy sent in a post earlier today which was saying that at the moment the data model doesn't seem to be talking about separate fields, and I think that is a very, very important issue, because if we are talking about a system which has the original script, then we really do need, effectively, for those address fields and for organizational names, it is certainly the case that we need two fields each, one in the original script and then one which, to continue what I was saying before, in the case of addresses would probably be a transliteration, although there may be some exceptions in the case of cities, as I was just saying. The other situation is in the case of organizational names, it's even possible that three fields would be required, and the reason for that is that there might be a rule which says, if there is a, if this Chinese organization has an English translated title, then put that in. But if it doesn't have an English translated title, then that needs to be a transliterated title of the organization. And what I was suggesting earlier is that you would probably actually need three fields there, because depending or not whether it was a translation or a transliteration, I don't think you would want to keep that information in the same field. But anyway, Amr, would you like to pick up some of that?
Yeah, thanks, Chris. Regarding the lack of separate fields for same names in different languages, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, I think Rudy was referring to Annex A of the Expert Working Group status updates.
Yes,
and,
that's right, yeah.
Yeah, I don't think the intent of that example was meant to address the issue of translation and transliteration. I think in that specific example, that was just an example of how gated access to the registration data services would be done. So I don't think they were actually trying to address translated and or transliterated contact information in that specific example. So that might be why they have overlooked doing that, because they weren't actually making a recommendation to do so. So it might not be the best example to use. However, in the IRD working group's final reports, they did state that it would be perfectly fine and feasible to display certain elements, I think all elements in registration data services in different languages, in different scripts, possibly except for the sponsoring registrar, which would, where there would be the only limitation in doing this. Even though it wasn't included in that example of NXA of the status update report of the expert working group, it shouldn't be a problem. However, I feel it would be a better idea for us to focus more on the question of whether we feel it is desirable or not, and whether we are able to display or not is not necessarily the issue we need to be discussing right now, because that has already been addressed by the IRD working group, from which the issue report for this PEP came from. But we should really be focusing more on what we think is the best course of action to take. Do we feel that all contact information in all GTLD registries for all registrants, you think that all of that should be translated and or transliterated for the purpose of end users of Whois Lookup, because they would like to have access to Whois data in a specific language or not. And I'm guessing that they don't want access to all of it, but they want the option to be able to have access to whatever it is they want to have access to. That's what I think we should really be addressing more closely. Thanks.
Okay, thank you very much for that. Now, a couple of people with their hands up, and I'm afraid I don't know which order the hands went up. Rudy, would you like to say something?
Thank you, Chris. Rudy speaking. I agree with Amar that our focus has to be on effectively our charter, our mission. Defining if it's a required to have translation and transliteration of contact information. And I think that due to the fact that we are intensively discussing on this issue, is the proof that there is a need to have a translation or transliteration of contact information in order to be able to manage in a decent way relationship with registrars and registrants on domain name space. However, I'm just wondering if it is our duty, our task to inform other working groups, and when I say inform, to really push them to look at the issue and think about solutions, as for instance the expert working group is proposing data models. So I think it's important that we can trigger them and say, hey, please keep an eye on this and look for possible solutions. Otherwise, the implementation of our recommendation at the end would most probably be a year or three before it would be implemented, and then we are just out of the scope of our mission, I think.
Thank you, Rudy. I think that's a very good point. And, you know, effectively, you know, the fact that the possible lack of fields issue came up, and it may be that that issue came up for, you know, rather strange reasons. I think the fact that that issue came up is actually really important, you know, because obviously, you know, if the data model could not accommodate it anyway, then you know, that's a really serious situation, and you know, we certainly do need to be bringing that to the attention of the relevant parties. Peter, would you like to say something at this point?
Thank you. This is Peter Dernbach. And I just wanted to come back to the point that I think Amr made a moment ago. In some of the comments, it seems that in response to the questions we posed, there was a response that reiterated a desire to ensure that registrants can enter their contact information in their native language. And my reading and understanding of our charter is that we're looking at the first question of whether it's desirable to translate contact information into a single common language or transliterate it into a common script. But there's nothing in our charter that suggests people, registrants, will not be able to enter their registration information in their own native language and native script. So I just want to follow up on Amr's point where we might want to make sure that the responses we're getting aren't based on a misunderstanding of our question.
Yes, thank you very much for that. Amr, would you like to say something?
Yes, thank you, Chris. Peter, I completely agree. Our charter questions are not designed to answer the question of whether we think registrants should submit contact information during domain name registration in their native language or script. What we are asked to address, the issue we're asked to address, is whether we feel that this, after this contact information has been submitted in their native language or the native script, whether it is desirable to translate and or transliterate it. But I have been getting the impression from some of the responses we're getting that folks are confusing the two issues. And that is why I feel there is a bit of a communication breakdown in what we are asking and the responses we are receiving. So in terms of should registrants be allowed to submit their contact information in their native languages? Well, personally, I think yes, absolutely. But that is not the question we are being asked to address. We're just being asked to address is whether all of these need to be translated and transliterated or not. And that is a completely different question, serving a completely different purpose. So I think you and I are on the same page. And I just feel that we need to make this clarification to the members of the community who've been submitting responses. Thanks.
Thank you, Amr. I agree with that totally. I think we possibly should have made it clearer that we were not talking about, you know, whether or not input in native scripts would be allowed or not. My own understanding was very much that we are presuming that there will be that input, and then the question is, once we've got that input, then what happens in the case of these various categories, these various fields, effectively. I agree with that, it may be necessary to possibly to make that clearer, because I think it's true to say that one or two of the replies may sort of indicate a bit of confusion in the area. Okay, thank you for that. Petter, would you like to say
just
something?
Just a quick question.
Yes.
Would it be possible to send that out like today or tomorrow, because it could also be an excellent reminder that we're looking forward to see comments from all groups.
Well, yes. I mean, I think possibly that I actually feel that that might be too soon a time frame, because I've actually only just hastened the various SOs and ACs. So I think... it's just a bit too soon after my having done that. And I think also we need to think exactly how we phrase that. So I think we may need to do something, not absolutely immediately, possibly sort of sometime next week. That would be my instinct. Okay. Shall we perhaps come back to what we were discussing earlier. I think, in fact, the issues that have been brought up may explain some things which in the AILA, in the at-large document, were rather confusing. I think that may, in fact, mean that it won't take quite so long to get through it. Okay. In fact, we were just talking about translation and transliteration, which, and then we're just about to go into section two, which is now at the top of the screen. And because originally it was really looking as if the at-large document was questioning whether this should be done at all, which obviously was a bit of a challenge for us. But then later on, you do get things like facilitating people taking action to protect end users as a justification for translating or transliterating. So actually, there is an understanding that there is a benefit there, and also promoting consumer trust in the domain name system as another motivation, allowing users worldwide to see who the domain name registration holders are. That's another part of that motivation for doing either transliteration or translation. Now, there was actually a bit further down, which I didn't understand when I read it, and it may be because of the sort of conversation we've just been having, but there is this thing about transformation possibly being necessary even with ASCII. I don't know I don't really understand what that is. I mean, it might be that... Oh, yes, okay. Actually, I've got it, just thinking it through. What it is you could imagine a situation where there was a language like Vietnamese which was using ASCII, but it's using ASCII in a very unusual way. And so you actually needed some kind of translation to, or some sort of transformation to explain what the various parts of that Vietnamese address mean. So I think that may be what that is referring to. Then moving further down into six, then there is talk about, well, when does the policy come into effect? And then we've got this rather interesting answer: after the policy on internationalized registration data has come into effect. Interesting answer. And I think I don't have much to say about number seven. But please, anybody, jump in if you would like to add something. And as we go further down, there is this talk about general use or specialized use, and then we are well into the whole debate about cost and who should bear the cost. And if we have time, I actually put a new page in the wiki about cost, because this is something that's coming up in all of the answers now. I thought it's a very important area, and so we need to really have a look at that information in one convenient place. So you've then got things like sharing costs between those collecting the information and those requiring specialized use of the information. So I think that's really the interesting part there. And then if we go further down, we start to have a look at the comments. Specific comments, in fact. And here, you know, they're talking about specific parts of who is. That's a very similar approach to the one that we have been taking, you know, that we are looking at individual parts of who is and saying, you know, well, this one we may want to translate, this one we may want to transliterate. Now, what are the problems? So I think that's quite similar. Okay. And that, I think, is the all I was wanting to say about the at-large wiki today, but they seem to be adding to it quite actively, so we may want to come back to the at-large wiki in a future meeting. You know, as they add comments, I really just need to remember to come back to this in the future. Because, you know, I suspect it will grow and grow. Okay, and that then takes us into the into this sort of talk about cost benefits I was just mentioning before, and that is question 5 in the in section 4. I think there are 8 questions, and this is actually question 5. In there. Yes, we've got the wiki up. So if we go into the number 4, and then it's question 5, and that is this is a much expanded look at cost. And so I think what I really want to emphasize is that you know, this is an area where we are looking at what people are saying. We absolutely have made, you know, we have no policy. We are just looking at various possible ways of doing things. I think that needs to be stressed. And let us go through these things in chronological order. And so the first opinion we got was from the EC. And so this is: registries should bear the cost of translation and transliteration of registrar data, and registrars should bear the cost of translation and transliteration of registrant data. Okay, so that's basically a sort of almost like a pyramid. So that was their approach to it. Okay. If anybody would like to bring up any points about these opinions, please do so. But if I don't see hands going up, I'll just go through into the next. Ah, yes. Okay. Amr, what would you like to say about the EC?
Yeah, I just wanted to say that comment makes absolutely no sense to me at all. once data is translated or transliterated at the registrar level, then it would automatically go to the registry, and it could potentially go through the registry in all languages and scripts that it exists. So I'm not sure if the European Commission is recommending that the same data be translated and transliterated twice or not, once by the registrar and once by the registry.
I don't think that was their intention, and I have a feeling that one of the other responses is quite similar to that. So we may want to compare and contrast, but it may be that the other response is just a bit easier to understand. Thank you for that.
Now, another comment I have on this point is that it is my feeling that if registrars and registries are required to bear the cost of this one way or another, this cost will be shifted to the registrant, because, well, these are businesses and they're in the business of making money. And if you increase their cost, they're going to increase the price of their service. And in the end, the customer will end up paying for it. So what if registrars and registries are required to bear any costs, any of this, I think it is reasonable to assume that registrants will be also required to at least bear part of the burden, if not all of it. Thanks.
Thank you, Amit. Yes, I think that is in the real world, I think that is highly probable. And in fact, one of the other responses makes that sort of very, very clear. Okay, let us have a look at Thailand. I mean, in fact, we did look at Thailand last week, but you know, just for the sake of completion, we'll go through this. Okay. Yeah, so they're saying, we would suggest considering demand-orientated approach for this matter. And so in this case, the demand to translate, transliterate, and maintain contact address information is belongs to the data owners or registrants, and the demand for address validation could be from registrars. Therefore, the cost of conversion from local language into common language should belong to registrants, and the cost for validation should belong to registrars. So the first bit of that is very similar to what Amma and I were just saying. You know, so some of that cost is certainly hitting the registrants. But the interesting thing is that validation would then be hitting the registrars under that model. Okay, and so if we continue and have a look at the at-large approach, let's have a look at this one. So the decision on who should bear the burden should be informed by the views of all affected. Well, that's fair enough, which would include these various people, registrar, reseller, registry. And there's just a whole list of stakeholders here. In determining who should bear the cost, it would be important to consider whether the transformation of contact information is made for general use or specialized use. So here we go again. Okay. And if the it's explained. Brilliant. So if the transformation is required for general use, the cost should be borne by the process or the entities that collect the information. So there could actually be two levels there. That's the point of it. If the transformation is required for specialized use, the parties requiring that specialized service should bear the cost. So the question that would come out of there would be, you know, how do we define general and specialized? That's really going to be the key aspect of that. If transformation has general use and is crucial for particular specialized use, then a sharing of costs between those allocating the information and those requiring specialized use. Okay, yeah, we've actually looked at that. So, yeah, I think as far as I'm concerned, the key thing here is how we define, you know, if we were to consider that as a possible model, then the key thing would be the definition of those two words, general and specialized. Amma, would you like to add to that?
I'm just wondering. This is Amr. I'm just wondering if we can, as a working group, make a policy recommendation to differentiate between the two. That would be interesting, actually, because then we would not answer our charter question by saying either yes, we feel that it is desirable to transform, or no, we do not feel it is desirable. But we might then say that, yes, we feel it is desirable in certain specialized circumstances, and based on that, we think this stakeholder should determine who bears the cost. I'm still a bit puzzled on how to react to this opinion, because my impression was that we would recommend a policy that would be overarching to all BTLDs or all registrars, using at least a specific GTLD that we feel should this rule should apply to, then we would not be able to differentiate between the use and whether it is specialized or generalized in trying to determine who bears the cost. Thanks.
Thank you, Alma. I'm very sympathetic to that. It's I feel that it would be very good to, you know, to get more information there. And I agree with you. I think it's really on the edge of our mandate. So, you know, eventually we are just going to say translate or transliterate. I'm not sure whether we could say, well, you know, in this situation, you know, that there would be some situations where you may do something different. I think that's starting to be outside what we should be doing. But that may become clearer if we get a more fleshed out definition of general and specialized. I think that's possibly something we could say there. Now, last but not least, in costs, and this thing is actually not, this is not a this is not a direct, you know, this is not coming from the, you know, from our letter to the SOs and the ACs. This is just, I happen to spot on the NCSG discuss mailing list that Kathy Clayman was saying something rather interesting. And also, it's rather different from what we've just been seeing going through that. So she is saying, who pays? IP and LE probably won't. And then she's talking about Africa, and to burden these new registrars in areas like Africa, I suppose, with additional cost of translation or transliteration seems not only burdensome and but she's using the word potentially quite destructive, could also be anti-competitive. So I feel that it's quite interesting to have this opinion in here. Keeps us in contact with reality, really. Now, I wonder if anybody would like to say anything about that, or whether we move on to other questions from this cost one. Okay, well, I shall continue to collect all of these things as they come in. I really hope that the wiki is helpful to you and that at least you can use the wiki to find out quickly where we are, who said what. Right, so moving on into other areas. So actually, I think officially we're now moving further down the agenda, but into other questions. And we don't really need to say much about 6, when would policy come into effect, because we did mention that earlier. And then, then number 7 is what should be mandatory. Just check. Whether we need to pick this up. I think, you know, certainly that page number 7, the question number 7, what should be mandatory, there is quite a lot of overlap with the EWG on GTLD directory services. Okay. So let us then move on to number 8, which is the verification and validation. And there was quite a lot of discussion on the list about various aspects, and I think it's all linked to from here. So first of all, there was a validation post by Margie Millam, wonder if it's possible just to display that quickly. Yes. Now, I don't know what other people felt, but I think for me, the really interesting thing was this sort of idea of a scoring methodology, that in some way, perhaps particular fields in the database would be run through, you know, would in some way have a score attached to them. So, if the data is validated, then, you know, and it's completely correct, the format that it should be in, and it gets 100%. But then perhaps if the transliteration is wrong, or the translation is wrong, and it, or there are missing, you know, there are fields which are empty or something like that, then that number starts to come down. But quite an interesting idea, quite practical. I wonder if anybody else would like to comment about that article, and also whether anybody spotted something major in there which I have missed. I mean, for me, that was really the highlight of that. But it may be that there are other aspects in there that somebody would like to draw out. Just have a quick look and check. I've seen nothing else. Yeah, I think that really was. It is, the whole idea of what is an accurate, who is record, and statistical analysis. Yes. Okay. Now, if there's nothing else about that, we actually, earlier on, we did briefly talk about working methodology, but I think we can probably be working our way through other questions, because we have mentioned working methodology. And so one of those things that we could look at is actually point 5 on the main menu. So we've got the examples of addresses. And actually, Amar, before we leave the sort of validation, Amar is actually saying something in the chat about getting input from registrars who have a lot of experience. That up. And in fact, in the RAA, there is a lot of very interesting information on validation. I noticed that. Okay, let us have a look at the point 5, which is examples of addresses. That's it. And and then we've got the new one is the Taiwanese one there. And actually, come to think of it, I covered some part of the Taiwanese ones earlier, because if you go in there, you will find various documents. But what they're talking about is the local Taiwanese rules for what to do with various place names. And I was very much bringing out the sort of Taipei and Taipei problem, and the Keelung and Geelung problem came out of there. But the full thing is in that system, as you can see. And an extremely interesting example. And this actually links quite neatly with another place that we need to go, and this is actually responding to what we had a lot of Thai input last week from Pittinan, and she was talking about the Universal Postal Union and also the UN Geographical Name Organization. Now, the acronym is UNGEGN, and I can't just immediately think of what it stands for, but it is basically a database of geographical names. So in fact, I think the Taiwanese one, we can really regard these documents as being detailed rules on local Taiwanese geographical names. Now, if we go back to our main menu, we can have a look at point 11, which is a new point called resources. And so here we have the two things. So we have that United Nations, there's the acronym, United Nations Group of Experts on Geographical Names. And if we go in there, we find a database of geographical names, but looking at it, the number of the coverage is actually quite a major problem. So if you actually look at the numbers of names, there are really not all that many being covered. So that is a bit of a concern for us. I mean, really, if we were going to use a standardized database and just sort of pick the names out of there, then my own personal feeling is that the database would need to be a lot larger. I don't know whether anybody has any feelings about that, but that's really what I felt looking at this. You just, as soon as you get down to the local level, you're just not going to find the names, so you're stuck. If I'm right, then this isn't really a robust, large-scale solution. I mean, very, very interesting, and it is a database I know. I have used it in work before now, but I think it's just not big enough. If we come back to the other possibility, so this is the Universal Postal Union, and here we are. Actually, let's just stay on this page for a moment before we go into the Universal Postal Union. But the reason I am complaining about the small numbers is actually here because, look, we've got quite a lot of country names. But the number of cities is actually quite small. If you think of the number of cities in the world, the difference is, the problem is how you make a difference between a city and a town. The problem is that we are dealing with towns, cities, everything, and 3,000 is a very small number, so that was a concern. And now, if we do go into the Universal Postal Union resources there, this was quite interesting because basically what comes through this, as you scroll down through it, there are two documents. I think the second one is not very interesting, address elements, that one is not very interesting, but the guide to the headings used in country sheets, the English version there, that has some rather interesting things because as you go down into the examples on page 16, the numbering is very strange in this document. It's because it's 16, but it's actually only a couple of pages down. And there, really, the key element is requirements of the country's postal authority. It's that expression at the top there under examples. So what this really means is that, you may think, oh, this is one really handy standard, but actually it isn't, because what it's doing is it's pointing at probably hundreds of other standards. So you sort of come in here really feeling very optimistic, this is going to solve all of our problems, and I'm afraid it doesn't. So that is certainly my opinion, and I'm really prepared to talk this through. But I think we probably just need to continue to build up our resources. Perhaps there is something out there which will solve all of our problems, but I don't think either of these gets us particularly far. It's just, if we have to go down this route, then it is very, that's interesting. Amma is saying that the UPU addressing system is the standard in the RAA. Oh, that is interesting. All I would say is that, if that is the case, then it's interesting because it strikes me as being quite a cumbersome standard in that case. But if that is working, perhaps that is an acceptable approach. For formatting, formatting is formatting could mean several things. I think this is probably some homework for me. I will have a look at exactly how the RAA is using that, but it does very quickly become lots and lots of standards, and so I was really thinking that our approach of just having relatively simple rules might actually be a better approach. But then admittedly, under that system, you do end up with Krung Teb, not Bangkok, which is really the problem. Okay, we are at the top of the hour now, so I'd just like to ask whether anybody would like to bring up any other thing under any other business. Okay, well, in that case, thank you very much, all of you, for a very good call. And as we have been doing, we will continue to process the various responses we get and continue quite an active mailing list over the next week. I'll see you in a week's time. Goodbye, then.
Thank you, everyone. Have a great day.
Thanks. Bye.
Bye-bye.